Welcome to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. I started this show to talk about all of the interesting, complex, paradoxical, and sometimes uncomfortable aspects of the human experience. If you get anything from this show, the greatest compliment you could give me is to share this show with somebody that you think the message may resonate with, or to head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Additionally, if you want to interact with me, you can follow me at @RickAlexander_ on Instagram. Without further ado, on to the show. Happy Friday, everybody. Today's quote is by an author named Rashid Oganlaro. He said, "Wisdom is the awareness and acknowledgement of the gap between life as you perceive, project, and wish it to be, and life as it is. And being shrewd and able, moment to moment, to flow, shift, act, adapt, or just be accordingly." I want to talk about that quote a little bit today. I want to talk about perception. I want to talk about the world that we exist in right now, the world that we're creating for generations to come, and then what those generations to come, what it's going to look like when they act in the world. So I'm just going to make some observations about the world, some things I've been thinking about lately, and I think this is the kind of episode that you can do anything you want with, right? You could reject it. You could also hold some space and say, well, is that true? Are there parts of this that seem true in my experience? And perhaps if you do, kind of if I could go back to the original morning coffee method or idea years ago, it's like, well, just allow this seed to sit somewhere in your consciousness and maybe it will spring, maybe it will provide fruit later on in your life or maybe later on this afternoon, right? We never can tell when we plant things in our mind, what they're going to manifest as later in our lives. And if the more we plant, right, the more we're able to reap and the more we're able to harvest. And today's episode is a perfect example of that because I started doing some research for my book, Ambitious Heroes and Heartache, which was even had a different title way back when I started doing this research. But I got really interested in how it is that humans evolve themselves and how it is that we came to be however we are right now, right? So I did all of this research on human perception. And one of the things that I began to realize, and a lot of this was on the back of the work that Jordan Peterson has done, something he helped me really understand is that, you know, as humans, we are mapping out our environment constantly, right? Because we have to have a map, right? We've got to have some way of being able to move through the world. And so you have to make certain logical assumptions about the world. Now, I've talked in the last couple of weeks about how that really is the fundamental job of the mind. It's to tell you what things are and what they're not. And it's to tell you how certain patterns and how certain archetypes are going to play themselves out in your world so that you can act accordingly, right? And so as we map out the world, we are creating a map that tells us how to act based on the things that we want, the things that we value, right? And so our perception, this is what our perception is how we are looking at the things in the world, right? Very few of us exist in an objective reality. Now, I would say in certain intellectual circles, there's this idea that objective reality is kind of the only thing that matters. But I would say that anybody that's suffered in their life, anybody that's had their heart broken, anybody that's made decisions based on fear, actually what's happening is they are living in a profoundly subjective world. And so what I would argue is that we are all living in a profoundly subjective world. So what things actually are, right, whatever the objective is, of course it matters, but it doesn't matter as much for our moment-to-moment experience because we're thinking, feeling creatures, right? We feel we're sentient. We feel our way through the environment. We feel the environment on our skin. It tells us, oh man, so we feel the cold front coming in. It's like people forever have understood, like now's an opportunity. Now's the time that we need to gather. Now's the time that we need to improve our shelters, right? And so as we've evolved ourselves, we are fundamentally feeling our way through the environment. And so though there is an objective world, it is our subjective sense of how things are that we're actually acting on, okay? So another, something else that we need to talk about in this episode is psychological safety, okay? And so what psychological safety is just, it's your ability to feel safe in your environment, right? And that's mentally, you have to feel that, because you could think about all of your actions are first thoughts. Now, sometimes you're acting without thought, right? We call that mode of being flow. But it's also worth noting that most of the things that you do, there's a thought as to why. Why do I go take this job? Why do I go engage in this hobby? Why do I even pursue the things that put me in flow in the first place? So it's always starting with a thought, and then it becomes action, right? And that's, so one of the profound things that the Buddha figured out is, well, our thoughts, if we can go to our thought first, what that presents us with is a moment by moment opportunity to make a new choice, to act differently in the future, so that we don't fall into old patterns, habits, conditioning, things of that nature. Okay. And so as humans, again, like I said, we need this sense of psychological safety. And so one of the ways, and now I understand that I've covered a good amount of this over the last couple years, but I'm kind of wanting to pull it all together so I can talk about today's point. And so I'm just kind of recapping things. So some of you understand this stuff and some of you are just learning it for the first time. Just hold space, because I'm going to probably tie it together in a way that we haven't talked about in the past. So psychological safety, we all need it. One of the ways we create it is by orienting ourselves in time and space, right? And so the way that we do that is with structure, and we do it with routines, and we do it with habit. And so when the pandemic first started and everybody's routines and habits and structure was pulled away from them, right? We were, and then also we had, of course, the fear on top of that. But what's happening is people are starting to learn that the world is a profoundly unsafe place because their psychological safety, the things that they use to center themselves, were taken away. Now, oftentimes what we do, instead of recreating that structure, which is what we need to do, right? Because humans can't exist without structure, because you can't exist without psychological safety. I mean, you can, but your world feels like chaos constantly. And so one of the things that people do is start to hit the escape button, right? And so we start smoking a lot more weed, and we start looking at a lot more porn, and we start looking at drinking a lot more, and we start doing things that center us, right? In a more toxic way, basically, is what it comes down to. And that creates its own sort of agent of chaos in our lives, right? But if we're talking about what is good for our well-being long-term, then what we need to talk about is how to create more routine and more structure and more habits. Now, over structure, over routine, over habits become tyrannical, right? That's the tyrant. That's Nazi Germany, right? It's like too much structure, and we humans don't flourish in that way too. So we are always trying to find our way between the structure and the chaos. But something that's really worth noting is that when we create this sense of psychological safety for ourselves, that is the thing that gives us the ability to go into chaos, right? And so our parents, this is why routines and structures are so important for children, right? Because they have to map the world out as a safe place to be. Because if they don't, they won't go out and take the necessary amount of risks that a human must take in order to live a worthy life, right? So because we could say right now, to be human is to risk, right? It's not... We can convince ourselves of all sorts of things in this life, right? And we do, right? But at the end of the day, to be human is to risk, right? We are fragile, we are breakable, we are finite, and we live in an impermanent world with a very harsh reality. And so we have to feel a bit of safety. Otherwise, we won't go contend with all of those animating forces in our lives, right? We won't go contend with the chaos. And the way that humans evolve themselves is with the chaos. They map out a known territory and they continuously expand on that map, right? That's what a campsite is, right? You're in the wild, you map out this particular area, and it's like, okay, I know here. And so if it gets super late at night and you want to wander away from the campsite, you'll probably start feeling uneasy, right? Well, a city is that at scale, right? A town is that at scale. And so what humans are doing is we're mapping out known territories and we're continuously pushing into frontiers. Now, in our lives, we can do this in all kinds of ways. We can do it physically. We can go play with the limits of our own physical ability when we run. I'd say that's why I ran ultramarathons for so long, and why now I'm really into mountaineering and climbing. It's like, because we can go poke at danger a little bit from a safer spot where we feel safe enough to go do so. So what that tells us is if there is no campsite, if there is no town, if there is no city, if there is no structure, then that uneasy feeling that you have when you're in the woods at night, far away from anything that you know, that permeates your entire world, and that creates the fabric of your existence. And so when that's the case, you're now trying to survive. You're not trying to evolve. You're not trying to thrive. You're not trying to better yourself. And so in your own life, you could think about it in terms of there are all kinds of animating forces that are going to want to push you into stagnancy. And then there's also going to be other forces that push you into chaos. And our job is profoundly to take stock of what's happening around us so that we can create a mental model for our lives that allows us to engage with chaos in a productive way so that we can continue to evolve, because humans don't stand still, right? Stagnation kills our soul quicker than almost anything will. There's something else that's happening right now too, though, that's worth considering. And I've talked about this as the breakdown of consensus reality, right? So the idea here, and I'm writing a piece on this that will be out hopefully in the next month, but the idea being that when we agree on things, it's reality. And so if something happens that we don't agree on, well, then it's not necessarily considered definitively reality. So if you and I are both looking at a bear, or five of us are looking at a bear, we can all say that a bear is there and that's reality. But if I take something like a psychedelic, right, and then I see a bear and nobody else sees it, that's a weird thing, because even when you take psychedelics, things feel very real. But if you don't have consensus on what is real, then it's not considered reality by the rest of the world, right? Philosophically, it's just not. So right now, what we all consider to be reality is deteriorating rapidly, right? And so that's the agent of chaos that is exposing itself in our lives. And so adults everywhere cannot agree on what's real. So we can't agree on, whether masks are a good thing. We can't agree on, profoundly, everything everywhere. And people say, well, it's not, agree with science, whatever. It's like, sure, but understand that reality is it really does matter if we have consensus or not. Because if not, then what we have is chaos. We don't have reality. We don't have structure. We don't have something tangible that we can get our hands around. So right now, all of these humans, all these adults can't agree on whether school should be back in session, right? They can't agree on, let's just sit with that example for now. We can't agree on whether school should be back in session. Now, some are, some aren't, some are virtual. Some parents have chosen to just pull themselves from that system and homeschool them completely, right? So there's something that's worth considering here. Adults can't agree on what's reality. Right. Well, kids aren't idiots, right? They're not stupid. They know that we can't agree on what's reality. They see us fighting. They see the media. When I watch the media, if I'm not careful, it will affect my mental state. But I'm at least strong enough to know that I've at least mapped the world out enough to know that what they're telling me isn't always reality, right? And you are too. You hear something crazy, or you hear something insanely negative or pessimistic or fear invoking. It might invoke fear, but you also probably have the cognitive faculties to create a boundary around your psyche and keep that agent of chaos out of it so that you can continue moving your life in a productive manner. And so something that's worth considering is, because all of these adults can't agree on what's safe, and then kids are being thrusted into that environment, the way that they're mapping out the world right now is as a profoundly unsafe place to be, right? Imagine when you were going to school, if nobody could agree on whether you should actually be there or not. That was never the case for any of us, right? Even if you didn't like school, all the adults seem to agree that we have to go, right? Of course. And so right now we're in this situation where all of these adults cannot agree on what we should be doing. And because we can't agree, all of these children whose minds are formulating, right? Especially probably between 8 and 16 years old, it's like this thing is completely malleable, right? Their minds are figuring out how to be in the world, how to exist in the world, how to act in the world. What's the world like so that they can act in it? That's what they're actually mapping out right now in their minds. And they're mapping the world out as a profoundly unsafe place to be where nobody can agree on shit. And so what's interesting about that scenario is, in the future, some of those kids are going to have profoundly difficult times acting in the world, because that sense of psychological safety that we've been talking about this whole time, that is so rudimentary and fundamental to you and I being able to act in the world, is being evaporated. It is being taken from them, right? And so a lot of people whose minds are forming right now are going to get into their 20s, and they are going to have a really tough time making the necessary decisions that allow them to incur and shoulder the necessary amount of risk in order to live in accordance with their value system. Because all of our values, whatever they may be, and they are individual, require a certain amount of risk in order for us to honor them, right? To honor ourselves in service to our values, because that's what we're actually doing. And so when we honor ourselves in service to our values, we realize, well, if I really value this like amount of love, for example, if I really value this relationship, it's actually going to require that I risk not having other relationships, right? That's a very simplistic way to think about it. And it's like, well, but if nothing feels safe, then you're not going to want to risk anything. You're going to want to keep what you have, because you're walking around the woods at night and you have no fucking clue where you are, and you're nowhere near known territory. Right. And so what the conversation needs to be right now is how to engage with fear appropriately. Right. This is the conversation that our children absolutely have to have, because the thing that's going to save them is the same reason that you can watch the news and then create a psychological boundary to keep the BS out of your mind. That's what's going to save them. They need to learn how to engage with fear. Right. Because it is present now. Consensus reality is breaking down. And as it does, it's calling forth the conscious adult, right? The adult needs to be conscious of what's happening within their mental state. What is it that they value? How is it that they want to live their lives? Because there are a bunch of things right now that are known to hurt us, right? And so as consensus reality breaks down and it calls forth the conscious adult, what that requires of us who are making the attempt to be conscious, right? And not everybody is, but if you're listening to this show, there's some part of you that is, right? That wants to engage with ideas that sound different or interesting, or right, you want to figure out what you think for yourself. And if that's you, there's more than you to consider here. And that's kind of the crux of this episode, is that, you know, you're doing the hard work to be a conscious adult and to make decisions that are going to be in the best interest of yourself. And I believe firmly that if you're making decisions that are truly honoring self in service to your values, what you're going to find is that those decisions are also honoring the collective, because you're no longer projecting your trauma into the world. You're no longer projecting an inauthentic way to be into the world, right? And so that's a really noble and simultaneously functional thing that you can do, is try to cultivate consciousness, figuring out what it is worth your attention and time. And as you do that, we as adults have to have really careful and in-depth conversations with the children in this world whose minds are forming, because they are learning that the world is a profoundly unsafe place to be. They're not idiots. They are seeing all of this, right? Even at very, very young ages, they are picking up on what is going on. And, you know, kids, because they haven't labeled the world as much. This will be the last thing I say, and then we'll get out of here. So kids, let's go to Hindu culture. So when people get through the working class in Hindu culture and they want to put themselves into ultimate reality and they want to understand God, let's say, which is what ultimate reality is, better, what they do is they go into the woods and they practice not seeing the world with labels. Right? Because what happens is when we label something, we're cutting reality up. And then the problem is that label becomes what that thing is, right? That's one of the profound problems with studying God in a logical way. It's because then God becomes this label, this word, right? And there's no word that could cover the expansiveness of what you are, let alone what God is. And so one of the things that these Hindus do is they practice not cutting the world up with all of these labels, which simplify and take a lot of the essence out of things. Well, something that's interesting about children is that they haven't learned all of the words to cut the world up yet. And so they are more intuitive, right? And so they are sensing their way through the world in a way that we're not, because we've already learned all of the rationale. We've already learned what things are like. We've already got preconceived notions. We've already mapped the world out in some way. They're doing that now, right? And so one of the things that is understood to happen is when you take all of these labels and all these words out, you start to experience things just as they are, as one continuous sort of flow of reality. And when that happens, you start to see the real magic that's behind everything, right? But you're also feeling the sense of what actually is. Remember, we're talking about ultimate reality. That's why you would do that. And so children have this sense stronger than we do, just because they haven't learned to cut the world up and simplify it yet. And so as they do, we have to have really real conversations about mental health, about how to engage with fear, about how to create boundaries around their psychology so that all of these things that we can't seem to agree on don't ruin their future, right? They don't ruin their opportunity. And the thing I would tell you too is, because this is a global thing that's happening right now, right? This need needs to happen at a global level, because what's going to happen in the future is if we don't have these conversations about how to manage fear and how to map the world out, then the human's ability to evolve, which is what we are, is going to be taken away. And so it is the world that's going to suffer, right? Because sometimes we evolve in the wrong direction, right? We create new technologies and then we kill millions of people with it, right? Sometimes the wrong animating forces pushes our evolution. And at an individual level, it's our responsibility to ensure that we are in service of the right animating forces, right? But evolution isn't negotiable for us, right? The world always continuously gets better. And I say better in terms of the emergence of the highest good does seem always to happen, right? We've talked about this before, how oftentimes the things that corral us into hateful ways of being are actually just wrinkles in time. But the world requires humans to continue to do what they do, which is make this place better for everybody else. And so we are doing the world a disservice. We are doing our children a disservice. We are doing the future of our race a disservice if we do not teach people how to contend with the chaos that is being injected into the individual life at a global scale, at a global level. Something worth your time, something worth considering. Anyway, I love you guys. Hope you have an amazing weekend. We'll chat next week on Morning Coffee.